G'day, Dons fans. It's been a strange old week to be a Bombers fan. Having not been able to take the edge out of the Swans, we had a tribunal hearing, a player re-signing, and a week of media talk to contend with. I'm Jonathan Walsh, and joining me in the Don and Stats studio to preview our round three clash against the Saints is Ian Hume. Hume, how's things, mate?
Bit sore today. Had a game of staff student netball to wrap up term one. The staff did valiantly go down to the students. We kind of need to play with more of an Essendon edge, I would say, in future. Just a shout out to one of the students, Tom Hughes. He's an Essendon fan and also a Don the Stat listener. Well done on getting the win, Tom, but I did score three goals on you, so I think I won the battle.
I can't for a second, mate, imagine that you went easy on the students either. We've played a fair bit of cricket together, and you do have white line fever, unlike most people I've ever met. So I can imagine that kicked in, and it was all about trying to get a win for you.
Yeah, well, look, I did manage to rein it in. I do like my job, and I imagine concussing a student probably wouldn't be a good way to keep it.
You might have got 4 weeks off work, though.
Yeah, maybe I'll get managed or something like that. Anyway. Look, before we start, just a bit of a hint at something that's coming down the pipeline. If you were thinking of going to the GWS game in round nine on May 11th at Marvel, maybe keep the couple of hours before the game free. We have some things in the works that many of you would find interesting to attend, I imagine. And thanks again to all our patrons, especially to all the new people who've signed up this past week. So big thanks to John Haley, Peter Chamberlain, James McGarry, Andrew Rawlin, Brady O, Ashwin George, Jay Pettigrew, James Sabell, Jesse Lucchesi, and Todd Vaines. We're very appreciative of your support. If you're interested in joining to hear our post-match first thoughts and the other Patreon-exclusive analysis, you can find the link to our Patreon in the description of this episode.
Yeah, well said, mate. We do have some exciting things coming up in the pipeline, which is really cool, and looking forward to that. And yeah, the Patreon community keeps growing, which is really exciting and flattering, to be honest. So thanks to everyone who listens and continues to support and likes and shares and reviews and all of that good stuff. We really do appreciate it. Shall we rip the Band-Aid off, mate, and get stuck into the Swans review?
Yep, let's do it. So as a reminder, Essendon 15-11, 101. Lost to Sydney 19-17, 131. So it was a strong start for the Bombers, but that lead was quickly gobbled up by the Swans. The game then seesawed for the next two quarters before the Swans pulled away in the end, running out 30-point winners. As we said last week after the Hawks game, there was a lot to like about that performance, but obviously a lot to work on, and we're coming off a loss this week as opposed to a win. A lot of what we spoke about in the pre-match, in the preview, last week ended up playing out on the night, particularly about our clearance work versus the Swans' turnover and ball movement. So let's get stuck into it. So as I said, pre-game, we were talking about the match being played out in two parts, the stoppages and the turnover. So let's start with a positive in the loss for the Bombers with the stoppage aspect. So prior to this game, whilst the Swans had been losing centre clearance, they'd been winning comfortably at stoppages in their opening cut two games against Melbourne and Collingwood. So on the night, while centre clearances were even with the Bombers up by one, the Dons were the first side to beat the Swans at stoppage this year. So they won that 27-18 for the night. So really pleasing in terms of getting first hands to a ball, particularly in an area that historically Essendon had been poor in. However, despite having that advantage, we couldn't really capitalise on it. The Swans actually outscored the Bombers from stoppage 7-5 to 6-6, and that included 5-2 from centre clearance in an area that was statistically even in terms of how many were won. What that probably shows is that, particularly at centre bounces, the Swans had a better defensive setup to be able to prevent scores from this source as opposed to the Bombers, and they probably got some easier exits out of their centre clearance as well compared to the Bombers.
Yeah, they certainly did. I think it also says something about our midfield's ability just to go with a team like the Swans and where they're at in their sort of cycle for the full duration of the match. We saw the Swans hit the scoreboard late in every quarter of the game. So red time scores, we lost comfortably. Uncomfortably is probably a better way of putting it. Up until three-quarter time, it was 2 goals apiece out of the centre bounce and 1 goal apiece from stoppages. In the last, it was a goal apiece from stoppages, but the Swans scored 3 goals to our 1 rush behind from centre bounces. So they really just got on top there and did a whole lot of damage. I think that's the next evolution of our midfield. We we did have some young players running through there, which is good to see. And we didn't have Darcy Parrish, albeit the Swans were missing, you know, three handy mids as well. But being able to sustain it longer against good teams is, you know, the difference between us being, you know, an okay side to being a really good side. You know, we did have a 7-day break against a team that had an 8-day break, so a day less break. We came off a game in 30 degrees, so maybe there's some, you know, reasons why we did fatigue late in the game. But we also ran six midfielders against seven. Our top three midfielders in Merritt, Setterfield and Perkins were pretty much mainstays, and they all spent as much time or more in the Swans midfield. Or sorry, in the midfield than the Swans top two. So they spread the load through their mids a lot better and a lot deeper than we did. And we had some options that we didn't use. We could have used Stringer and Gresham and the like in, you know, dribs and drabs just to give our mids a bit more of a rest and rotate a little bit heavily or a little bit more heavily against a team that we knew going into the game was going to do that. And in the end, they just ran over the top of us.
Yeah, and even the ones that didn't get as much of a look in but still did, like Hobbs and Durham, were still down around 10 appearances, whereas, as you said, our main three midfielders were in the high 20s compared to most of the Swans midfielders, which were topped out at sort of the low 20s there. I guess the other area of the game that was going to be important was the ability to turn the ball over off the opposition. And again, that's something that the Swans have been dominant to this stage of the year. And not much really changed on Saturday night in that respect. So the Swans ended up generating seven more intercepts and then scored three goals for more from turnover than we did. And partly that has to do with our setup and our ability to defend the ground. So, for example, intercept marks between the arcs, so between the 50s, we took two, and that was compared to the Swans' six. Now, that's not the only way you intercept the ball in a game, but it's one where you get full control of it and you can set up a game and move the ball on quickly. Also, it was just due to their superior foot skills and running ability. And it was highlighted, I think, in multiple locations, and a run that Errol Goulden did in the first quarter where he streamed through the ground and people just didn't go with him or chose not to go with him. And he ended up kicking it to McLean, who ended up kicking a goal. If you want to find a point of comparison in terms of mid-zone marks for Essendon compared to other Swans opponents, the Pies had seven in their game against the Swans, and the Demons took six. So both of them were far above what Essendon was able to achieve against the Swans in terms of those mid-zone intercepts. So we're a fair way behind those guys. And again, it's something that's been spoken about a lot on all the footy shows, Essendon's ability to transition and intercept defend. It's going to be a talking point until it's solved. It's not something that's going to go away. We know once the media latches onto something, they'll drive it into the ground even after it's been fixed. So I expect you'll be hearing that term transition defense a lot, Dons fans, until we do fix it. And it is an issue that we do need to find some way to either address and fix or find ways to make it so that transition defense isn't actually, or we can minimize the impact of that lack of transition defense. If we can find other ways to push our advantages that mean that we're not as exposed by those transition defenses issues.
Yeah, you're right. It is going to keep getting talked about until it's no longer a problem. I mean, we had lots of problems coming into this season that we needed to address. And the AFL average this season is 66 turnovers. We've turned the ball over 69 times. We turned the ball over 69 times against the Swans, and the Swans 61. So I guess double-edged sword there, isn't it? We gave the ball back more than the AFL average, three times more, and then won it back off the Swans five times less through turnover. So, yeah, we just gave them more opportunities to transition and to score. And it's only small amounts either way, but it really combines. And then you add that to the dominance that the Swans had in the centre bounce in the last quarter, and fundamentally it's the difference in the end result. So a lot of things went right, but at the margins, we came up short, and that had a big impact. We're clearly putting greater emphasis on the contests. We're getting more numbers to the contest than we have in the past. We're putting more pressure on at the source. And even Tom Papley mentioned that in his, you know, I think that got lost in his, beating the chest at halftime. Because one thing that he did mention when he said that was that our pressure around the contest was really good. So, you know, to have the opposition acknowledge that in the game is a real strong sign that we're getting better there. And that's not something that we would have said about an Essendon team too often in 2023 or previous. So we're seeing the signs that that's working. I think our eyes tell us when we're watching the match that we're a much better contested team and much better at pressuring at the source than we were last year. And the data's telling us the same. And, you know, enemy number one in the opposition's telling us that as well. I think there's a lot of focus. There's obviously a lot of focus on our inability to defend transition, but I think we're actually seeing some signs that we're getting better at defending transition. We're getting better at getting deep entries, getting number to the contest, setting up and getting repeat entries and then creating scores. We're third in the AFL for average tackles inside 50 per game. So we're doing a better job in that forward 50 of preventing the ball from coming out or at least coming out quickly. 6 goals, 6 in the game came from chains that started in our forward half of the ground. So where we won the ball, either at a stoppage or through turnover in our front half of the ground, the Swans scored 5 goals, 4 from forward half chain. So we outscored them in forward half football. 42 points in a game for us, that 6 goals, 6 is a 27% improvement on the 33 points we averaged in 2023. So there is some improvement in what I would call that true defensive transition, where you do get the ball inside 50 and you can get numbers to the contest and lock it in. What we're not getting better at, and arguably getting worse at it because of our focus on that forward half game, is defending the turnover and turnover transition. And in the first 2 weeks, we've given the ball back to the opposition in really open situations with shallow kicks or shallow entries inside 50 in the corridor, and kicks to one-on-ones that really expose us. We don't yet have enough players that switch instantly from offense to defense, and that's leaving us exposed. We need to fix both of those things, reduce our exposure by improving our, not just our ball movement, but our decision-making going inside 50, and then use selection as a tool to promote or demote the players that aren't performing in this part of the game. You know, I hope when we get some more resources back, and we're starting to, you know, we get a couple back this week, that, you know, that becomes a tool on selection night, that if guys aren't switching from turnover to defense straight away, that they go back to the VFL until they do that.
Yeah. And you noticed something in particular about how we set up after halftime that was different to the first half, in that we responded to what Sydney was doing in some respects.
Yeah, I think it's worth touching on. I did make the comment on Twitter after halftime that we shifted our defensive structure back. So, you know, we were really pressing up high and getting hurt on that turnover or defensive transition. And then to protect our defense, and I suspect probably to give our midfield a bit of a break too, because when you are playing a high press and you are asking your mids to work up and down a fair bit harder, and we weren't rotating our mids as much as the Swans were, but I do think that we robbed Peter to pay Paul to an extent. The Swans went from their own defensive 50 into their forward 50, so coast to coast, 15 times a game. Hawthorn did it 13 times. Or 15 times for the game. Hawthorn did it 13 times the week before. We had 9 in each of our first two games, which is bang on the AFL average. So on average so far this year, teams have averaged 9 times a game where they take the ball from their defensive 50 into their forward 50 in an uninterrupted chain. So offensively, when we've got the ball, we're at the AFL average going coast to coast 9 times a game. Defensively, we're minus 5. We're giving up 5 more than the AFL average. And that's giving our opponents 5 more opportunities to score in open transition than we're receiving ourselves. And what did we lose the game by Saturday night? It was an even 5 goals, wasn't it? So it is having an impact. But if we look at the result from the first half to the second half, the Swans had 11 of their 15 end-to-end transitions in the first half of the game. So when we shifted back, got our defensive set up a little bit further back down the ground, after halftime, we only conceded 4. So 4.5 of footy is 1 under the AFL average of 9. So, you know, we not a bad performance in that regard. In the first half, they scored 5 goals, 5 from turnovers in our forward 50. That then, that they took from end to end. So they won the ball back either from a kick in or from a turnover and went end to end and scored 10 times in the first half, which is way, way, way too much. But in that first half, our contested work and our work at stoppages was allowing us to score, and we were compensating for it. And we went into halftime feeling pretty good about the first half of the game. And the Swans hadn't scored from stoppages to that point in the game. So, you know, all in all, the first half was a sort of, you know, played out reasonably well for us. In the second half, we reduced them to 2-1 from turnovers in our forward 50. But in doing so, we dropped off at the contest. They scored 2-2 from stoppages, 4-2 from centre bounces. So we went from, you know, really pressuring up, getting numbers to the contest, scoring from stoppage, but conceding over the back as the Swans were able to cut through us, to then solidifying behind the ball, getting a better structure behind it, slowing the Swans down, but at the consequence of what we were able to do around the contest. So for the game, we scored 5 times out of those 9 chains that started in D50 and went into forward 50, which is a conversion of 55%, which is, you know, there or thereabouts around the AFL average. The Swans scored 12 out of 15 times, or 80% of the time, which is, you know, way too much. I think personnel coming back will help with the 12 scores, regardless of how many we cough up. Ridley and Redmond are better than what we had there on last Saturday, particularly Ridley in that sweeping role. So I think that'll bring down the number of times we're scored upon. But reducing the 15 times, that starts with what happens with our half forwards and our mids and getting better in that part of the game.
Yeah, and I still think we're working on our half forward and our midfield mix and what the best way to structure that up is. So it may still take a lot of time to get that right in terms of them playing together and working out those structures and ways in which they can stop that ball movement there. And I guess, look, I think it's pretty clear based on the opening rounds that the Swans are one of, if not the best side in it. And when you play against the best sides, it really exposes your strengths and your weaknesses. Other than the things we've really, really touched on, what did we learn about the Dons coming out of that match in your mind?
Yeah, just before we touch on that, mate, we wanted to get some focus on Errol Goulden in our preview. He was the one that, I know there's a lot of talk about Heaney, but Goulden was the one that can really open up and hurt you, and he did that. We didn't really send anyone to him. He had 7 inside 50s for the game on Saturday night. 6 of those resulted in scoring shots. 5 of them ended up being goals. So, I think we're a little bit asleep on the wheel in terms of that matchup. I know we tried some things around Heaney, particularly in the second half, but we let Goulden get off the chain. He really hurt us. I think what we've learned is we've got a harder and more combative edge to how we want to play. I think we've learned that we can pressure at the contest, that we can defend a turnover when we get the ball deep and create re-entries. And we can also sit back and intercept or slow down ball movement with a stronger defensive setup if we set it back. What we can't do at the same time yet is be able to blend that, you know, get that set up behind the ball whilst being able to commit numbers to the contest and pressure there. And what we're seeing once the first line is broken, particularly off the back of a turnover, we get opened up. So we need to be able to combine those two things. And when we can do that, it's where we go from pushing good teams like we did on Saturday night and making the Swans really, really grind out and earn that win to being a good team ourselves. So, I think a little bit of a game of two halves, a lot of good to take out of it in patches. But, you know, patches don't win matches against really good sides, and that's where we need to close the gap.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's turn our attention to what came out sort of in the post-match, and obviously the big news early in the week before all the new drug saga started to emerge was all about Peter Wright and his tribunal case. And obviously at the time, the collision with Harry Cunningham, which caused Cunningham to leave the ground with concussion, had to seem like it was going to be not only a major talking point, but a real pivot in how the AFL deals with certain incidents and the expectations around what players should be doing in terms of the safety, their duty of care to other players. And look, after Peter Wright ended up pleading guilty at the tribunal, the panel handed down a 4-week ban, which does mean he won't be back until Anzac Day. I know there's a lot of Dons fans that are really frustrated that we didn't try to fight the charge, given it was a marking contest that Wright was the target of the ball. He was leading towards it. He has eyes for the ball until Cunningham cuts across into his path a split second before collision. Cunningham does get to the ball first. So that does mean that in the end, Peter Wright does owe a duty of care based on the new tribunal principles. And with all the concerns around concussion, it did seem like the likely outcome. The club clearly weighed up the possibility of pleading not guilty and giving it a crack at trying to have him found not guilty at all and not receiving any weeks. But they weighed up that was a small possibility of success. And if they did go down that path and he was found guilty, it's likely he would have got 6 or 7 weeks. And I think they've just decided to go with the lesser of two evils in this situation. And it's generated endless talk, both online, in the media, across water coolers, I would say. What's your thought process about how this issue has played out this week, Jono?
Yeah, I mean, I don't typically engage in or consume a lot of AFL media for lots of reasons, particularly after a loss. And to be honest, and you know this, one of the reasons after a loss that I don't do it is not because I'm, you know, taking my bat and ball and going home and having to cry in the corner, but it's because you get a lot more focus after a loss than you do after a win. And I like to keep an open mind, or my own mind, to how we present things when we do this podcast, rather than potentially being not manipulated, but you know, swayed by what other people are saying. This is about us and our ideas. So I haven't caught up or watched or consumed a lot of the talk around the incident, and not too many footy fans in my office, so there wasn't a lot of water cooler talk about it either. When I saw it live, I think I commented to you, or maybe even in our Patreon chat, that I was really pleased to see it. I liked that, you know, when we spoke last week and previewing the game, we really did put an emphasis on needing to get that outlet kick down the line. So I was pleased to see Peter Wright early in the game leading up and contesting hard at the contest. But then once I saw the replays, I did resign myself pretty quickly to the fact that with the rule changes, there's a $1 billion class action taking place at the moment that around the consequences of concussions and how the AFL handled those in years gone by, that, you know, this was always going to be a 3+ week suspension. So I guess I wasn't disappointed come tribunal night, because I kind of already expected that it was going to be 3 to 4 weeks anyway, and that was how it played out. I was, of course, disappointed for Peter Wright himself. He's clearly a fair player. There was no malice, there was no intent to hurt, but the outcome, and that's what he's you know, that's what players are ultimately judged on now, is the outcome to the opponent. He jumped off the ground, he turned his body for good reasons, but the outcome was that he got him in the head and he concussed his opponent. And yeah, that just sort of is what it is, and we need to move on now. That's the game that we're, or the environment that we're living in 2024.
Yeah, and it sort of built on, like, it was an inciting incident for a few melees and fights and just a lot of niggle throughout the remainder of the game. But it really coincided with this idea of the Essendon edge, the new way the Bombers were approaching games. And it was clear from the way they contested against the Swans. We can see it in the stats in things like the clearance numbers in the hardball gets, which we dug into and found that we won that stat quite convincingly. And it was clear from the way the Swans were reacting, it was getting under their skin. And, you know, it was only 2 years ago that Luke Parker was mocking Dylan Shield for being soft. And now we have Swans players complaining about the Dons playing the man, which I thought was a bit rich from a few of their players there. And I guess the most pleasing thing about that, as I said, is despite going hard at the Swans players, we were also walking the walk, winning those hard stats that we probably haven't won in the past. So it does seem to me that if that's going to be the result, you're not just attacking the man, but you're also winning the ball. That's something that's sustainable, because it is something that you can build on, and it's actually likely to generate you scores and opportunities there. And, you know, hopefully it's something that lasts more than a couple of weeks, and they can sort of work their way to find that exact line. I think we saw Nick Hind with a flying elbow that was could have been catastrophic there on Chad Warner, and I think Sam Draper's hit on Jake Lloyd at the end there was probably had a lot worse intent than what Peter Wright did on Cunningham, but because of the result, obviously, there's a different outcome in terms of a punishment there. But I guess is this something you think is sustainable, even though we've only seen it for really a couple of weeks in this season?
At the moment, I think it is. Yeah, look, we support and passionate and love a club that has failed to live up to hope and hype and expectations in the past. So, we sit here in a position where we need to see things, we need to see things before we believe it. And 2 weeks is a pretty small sample size, but I think it's sustainable if everyone's buying into it. And I think at the moment, everyone is buying into it. Our reaction to that Peter Wright incident was what was most important in relation to that game. And yeah, the Draper one was, pretty silly, but the Swans had as many silly moments, if not more, throughout the game. But we maintained focus on the ball. Never did we let the niggle or the malaise detract from winning at the contest and winning the ball. And Hardball Gets ended up being 31-19 in our favor for the game, which is a huge result against a team for, a couple of decades now that has prided themselves on, Bloods culture and being strong and hard at the contest and winning hard balls. And we not only did we beat them in that facet of the game, but we absolutely smashed them. And just for people's benefit who are listening, Hardball Gets different to contested possessions. Well, in fact, they're a type of contested possession. So contested possessions include basically any possession that is in and around some level of contest. So even a loose ball get is a type of contested possession if there's perceived pressure around the contest. So hard ball gets are the real pure old school type of winning a ball on the ground against an opponent in a real contested situation. And in terms of everyone buying into it, I watched about half of the VFL game on Saturday, and I saw Archie Roberts and Lowerman Lowell display similar combative traits. So we were up against a Brisbane side that had a really strong team in a number of senior players. We're unfortunately a clash with our AFL side. Our emergencies are up in Sydney. Dylan Shield pulled out just before the game, so we had a really young side. But two of our draftees were really, standing up and flying the flag, and that was really good. So I think that's a bit of a sign, or a really strong sign actually, that from our captain in Zach Merritt all the way through to our recent draftees, that there is a real buy-in on this Essendon edge and whatever that actually means. So yeah, I think if you've got full buy-in, mate, that it is sustainable. And if you've got players that are missing out and are playing in the VFL that are flying the flag and displaying those traits, then the rest of the team knows that if they drop off, that they're going to lose their spot in the side. It's a long season. We've got a long way to go. The Swans conceded 64 and 69 points in their first two games. We put 101 on the board. So we've got a way to go in how we defend. We know that and have known that, but where this new combative style, this Essendon edge that we're starting to find is influencing our competitiveness and our contested work, and it's having an impact on the scoreboard for us.
Yeah, and one of those players that probably epitomises that sort of toughness and Essendon edge is Sam Durham, and some pleasing news on that front, especially for friend of the show Taz, who this person is. Taz is probably Sam Durham's biggest fan, and Sam Durham's being rewarded for all his efforts with a 4-year contract, and it's a great story, having only missed 9 games since being drafted in the 2021 mid-season draft, and 6 of those were between being drafted and debuting in 2021. He's come along a lot better than I ever expected, particularly this year. I certainly didn't see him playing centre square time before this season, but he's been super effective there. And so far this year, he's attended 19 centre bounces across the 2 games, with either won or drawn that centre bounce 84% of the time. And then that's the best in the side. So that's better than centre field. That's better than Merritt. Better than Perkins. Basically, if Sam Durham's there, it's very unlikely we lose the centre bounce at this point of the time of the season. He's obviously still raw in many ways, but he seems to be a very hard worker and a good learner, and very happy that we're going to see how he grows over the coming years.
Yeah, he's the prototype now of that combative nature that we're looking for. He started the year really well. He's added layers to his game. I think he's still got a little bit of a way to go to improve his consistency within games, but that happens with young players, and that happens with the role that he's playing too, where he's sort of fourth or fifth in the pecking order, sorry, for midfield rotations, and he's playing a bit of time forward and the like. I'm sure he'll get a decent whack of that new deal in 2024 as well. So a little bit of salary cap management there, I'm sure, to continue to open up space for what we want to do at the end of this season and next. It's great to see us locking up some of these early in the season. I know there was a little bit of, media hype earlier in the year, before the season started, about how many players that we had out of contract, and Essendon makes headlines, right? But we're signing a few up. I think he can be a big part in the solution to what we spoke about earlier in terms of needing more out of our half forwards to assist in defending the ground. I think if he can add that to his game and improve in that regard, then we've got ourselves a really, really good player.
Excellent. Well, look, let's turn our attention to our opponents this week in round three in the Saints, and just looking at how they went last year. They finished before, sorry, even if you go back earlier, they finished in 10th spot in 2022, and that was with 11 wins at a percentage of 99. And somewhat surprisingly, after that year, they gave the coaching reins back to Ross Lyon, who then took them to sixth on the ladder with 13 wins and a percentage of 107. They did eventually lose their home elimination final to the Giants, however. So the return of Lyon saw the Saints become the best defensive side in the competition. Across 2023, they only conceded 71 points a game. That was a drop from 77 points per game the year before. However, their scores for remain the same. They kicked 77 points per game in both years. Across their two games so far this year, so small sample size, they've averaged 81 points for and 78 a game. So fairly similar numbers to the last couple of years there. And I guess they've just been a little bit better in the tighter moments and in the tighter games, and it's got them extra wins last year.
Yeah, I just want to pause on that for a sec, mate. And I don't mean to discredit Ross Lyon when I say this, but I think there's a bit of a myth around that he single-handedly turned St Kilda into a defensive powerhouse. I know that everywhere Ross has gone, St Kilda the first time over at Freo, there's been a lot of focus on the defensive side of the game, and he's made some real inroads there. But they were already the seventh best defensive side in the AFL based on points against in 2022. So he had a pretty good foundation to work on. He's improved that by a goal a game, which is no mean feat. But they were already pretty good. It hasn't all been Ross Lyon. We improved by 5.7 points a game. We'd actually improved by 9 points a game prior to the last two games of the year. But of course, we're coming from a much lower base than St Kilda were, and a lot more work to do. So, yeah, I think just a little bit of context there was worth pointing out.
Yeah. Looking at some of the other indicators for the Saints, across their first two games, one of the big standouts changes in terms of their statistical measurements seems to be their willingness to move the ball by foot. So in 2023, the Saints kicked the ball 1.4 times for every handball, and that was ranked seventh in the comp. This year, they've jumped up quite high. They're going at 1.73 kicks per handball, which is equal third, and that's a big jump in terms of how they're looking to move the ball. Despite kicking the ball more, they're actually entering their forward 50 two times less per game, but they're being far more efficient. So they're scoring 53% of the time they're entering, as opposed to 45% of the time last year. So you can see where their increased scoring has come from this year, whilst their defensive 50 numbers in terms of entries and efficiency have remained relatively similar. In the clearances, they're going at positive numbers for both stoppage and centre clearance, whereas last year, whilst they were good at centre clearance, they did struggle at stoppage. And this year, they also have a positive differential for contested possession in both years. As an aside, in terms of those stoppage numbers, Essendon are currently the number one side for both centre and stoppage clearance differential. So not many people would have picked that at this stage of the year. Again, only a couple of games in. The Saints are, though, ranked bottom third in the comp for both marks and tackles inside 50, whilst the interceptor differential is minus four, which is ranked 13th. So Essendon is minus eighth in that stat to be ranked 17th. We know our intercept game is not the strongest. But the Saints don't seem to be that strong in that area at this stage of the year.
Yeah, that's right, mate. And just on marks, I know you specified marks inside 50 there, but marks in general, so all around the ground. In round one, they lost to Geelong. St Kilda had 88 marks for the game to Geelong's 101, so a differential of minus 13. in round two, in their win against Collingwood, St Kilda took 106 marks to Collingwood 79. So they had a plus 27 differential. So it follows a bit of a pattern or a theme from last year, where in their wins, they had a plus six differential for marks, and in their losses, they averaged minus eight. So it was just interesting to see in terms of looking at some of their changes from last year to this year, that there is a bit of consistency there with ball retention versus the opposition controlling possession, you know, through kick and mark.
Yeah, I guess sort of potentially we can look at playing Keaton's off this week to limit their effectiveness there, but we'll see more when we look at our match preview. The list changes for the Saints, they made nine list changes over the offseason. Obviously, we picked up Jade Gresham for them, and then that was the biggest name they lost. And he ended up playing, he had played 23 of their 24 games in 2023. Former pick number four, Jack Billings, was traded to Melbourne. He only played three games in season 2023, whilst Nick Caulfield was traded to the Dogs, but having not featured in 2023. So the Saints also delisted six players, only Jack Bytel, who played six, and Jack Perris, who is now on Essendon's VFL list. He ended up playing one game in 2023 for the Saints, were the only ones of those six to feature in 2023. So they've really kept the same players who performed for them in 2023 together. Really only Gresham is the one that they've lost from their best side last year. And he's the type of player they have a few of. Obviously, Higgins and Butler stand out as sort of those small creative forwards. So losing Gresham for them is not really a big loss in terms of their structure. Even though we're quite happy to have him and the quality of player that he is. In terms of who they've brought in, Liam Henry from Fremantle, he had a strong game against the Pies and obviously done his hamstring, so he'll miss this week. They've also brought in Paddy Dow from Carlton, who is yet to feature. Their first pick in the 2023 draft, Darcy Wilson, has played the first two games, whilst they've brought in six others through the draft, and Cat B rookie, who yet to play in season 2024, although there is a debutant this week, which we'll touch on when we get to selection. So overall, a really settled side from what they put out last year. Just a couple of changes in terms of their best 22, which is usually a good sign that a team is going to be able to build on things from the previous year. So, yeah, interesting to see how that coming up against them again after playing them so early last year.
Yeah, Liam Henry's looked really impressive for them in his first two games as a Saint. It's a real shame for him that he's going to be out for a decent whack now because he's playing really good footy. We'll get a good look at Darcy Wilson, their first pick in the national draft this week, and also their third selection. So they had two second rounders in the end. One was the compensation pick, obviously for Jay Gresham, and then they had that second one as well. We'll touch on that later. But yeah, really settled squad from last year. Henry comes in and basically replaces Gresham, which has been good. And Paddy Dow's been injured, so they haven't been able to pick him yet.
Yeah. Well, look, just going back to the last time we played the Saints back in, again, it was round three of 2023, and it was our first loss for the year with the Saints kicking 14-8-92 to Essendon's 11-8-74. The Saints kicked the first five goals of the game to gain that early dominance. Essendon spent the next two quarters really clawing their way back, and a couple of fantastic goals from Jai Caldwell that brought us to parity early in the fourth quarter. But the Saints, having spent so much of our energy, the Saints were able to kick another five consecutive goals from then to give them a comfortable buffer and then run out that 18-point winners. It was a very uncontested match. Both sides took over 100 marks. The Dons did win the ball at clearance, especially at stoppage, where they went at plus 12. However, the Saints were far more effective in forward 50. They took five more marks inside 50 and had five more tackles at their attacking end. In terms of players, Darcy Parrish, who's back this week, he had 35 possessions and over 500 metres gained, whilst Jake Kelly had a career-best 29 disposals. Essendon's goals were shared with Perkins, Scheel and Caldwell, each kicking two. For the Saints, their small forwards were dominant. We touched on them before. Both Higgins and Butler kicked four, whilst Brad Crouch, who won't feature this week for the Saints with injury, he led the way for them with 32 disposals and eight clearances.
Yeah, we coughed up some really soft goals in that first quarter, didn't we? A couple of Mason Redmond braid fades and just some bad errors, and ultimately it was the difference in the game. We did a lot of good throughout the match, but St Kilda are a team that don't need many looks. They've got some really creative players forward or centre, you know, as you've already spoken about. Mason Wood won't be there this week, but they've also got, you know, Dan Butler and Higgins and the like, who, are really, really damaging, and they punish you if you give them a bit of a sniff. And that was really what happened in that game. I think both teams have looked to be a bit more aggressive with the ball and how they move it in 2014. So it'll be interesting to see how that looks on Saturday. Both teams averaged over 100 marks in 2023. St Kilda averaged 104. We averaged 100 to be ranked number one and two in the AFL. So far in 2024, St Kilda is down to 97, ranked eighth, and we're down at 81.5, ranked 15th. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how. So, two teams who have really focused on trying to change up how they've moved the ball, how they go about it coming up against one another this year. But on that, mate, should we get stuck into this week and have a look at selection?
Yeah, let's do it. And we'll start with the Dons and three changes for Essendon this week with Mason Redmond back from suspension, Darcy Parrish from injury, and Jake Kelly, who missed the match against Sydney with a late illness. And out goes Peter Wright, obviously, with his suspension, as well as Elijah Sardis and Alwyn Davey Jr. being omitted. The emergencies this week are Elijah Sardis, Harrison Jones, and Alwyn Davey Jr.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by the ins. I think, well, I mean, obviously Redmond coming back from suspension picks himself. Parrish, assuming, you know, he's had that extra week now, we assume he's ready to go. It sounds like he trained really well on Wednesday. So they clearly pick themselves. And then Jake Kelly, you know, we do need another option given St Kilda's dangerous, you know, medium small forwards and wingers. We need another defensive option there. So the ins make sense. I'm not surprised we haven't brought a forward in for Peter Wright. I think St Kilda don't have a genuine second ruckman. They've used Mitch Owens in there the first couple of weeks. Comedy will come in and probably share a little bit of that as well. So I think two rucks for us gives us some real ascendancy in there, even though I'm typically not a fan of it. And I would have a different view if Peter Wright was playing, but given that he's not, I think it's the right way to go. I'm a little bit surprised that we've left Sardis out. I thought that extra run might be useful with Caldwell and Hobbs spending so little time through the midfield last week and Parrish coming into that mix. I thought an extra outside runner might have been preferred. It'll be interesting to see how we handle that midfield mix. This is just me reading tea leaves, not any intel, because it's not something that I seek out or listen to or interested in. But this has Brad Scott late change written all over it, doesn't it? For me, I just feel it in my bones.
Yeah, there's not an obvious sub on that list of interchange there. So maybe they are expecting that the one of the players who didn't pull up great from the Sydney game that's been named might miss out. I'm not going to speculate on who that is. People can look into that if they want to find out, but we'll know more as the game approaches. I'm expecting with Parrish to coming back in that we may see Durham lose a lot of his midfield rotations, and that could see him playing more wing time, and that could be part of the reason why they moved Sardis out. And I thought Sardis has been good these first 2 weeks, coming on as a sub against the Hawks, and I thought he did some good things against the Swans. I thought he played better than Hobbs did, to be honest. I'm also concerned that with Wright out and not bringing in, another forward option, we're going to miss out on an outlet kick. I don't think either Draper or Goldson are great at that outlet kick aspect of it, although even then, our forwards, Harry Jones moves well and can, get to the right spots. But again, he's not going to take heaps of contested marks, or he often can not even split the contest, and that's the minimum that you want from that outlet kick forward. So I can see why they haven't gone with it. They've gone with a small. They're gonna trust Langford and Stringer as those medium forwards, and moving around with either Goldstein or Draper as that anchor in the forward line, and then hope that the smalls like a Gresham can be creative and get one back on his old side.
Yeah, I think you're probably spot on there, mate, with Durham, and I guess there's also the potential that Archie, having had two big weeks in the midfield and having not, been asked to do that in previous years, might see a little bit more time forward or on the wing as well. So yeah, look, I think the flexibility's there. I just think we probably needed the extra outside runner. In terms of the Saints, they've brought Dan Butler back in. Kamenidi's come back in, and then Angus Hasty, I assume that's how it's pronounced. I haven't looked into it, in for his first game. So he was their third pick in the draft. Mason Wood comes out after getting injured last week, as does Liam Henry and Max King, who was suspended. I know we'll miss Wright for another 3 weeks after this, but you know, everything's come up a little bit Milhouse for us, with Max King also being suspended this week, and evens that out. Hasty's a 190-centimetre rebounding defender who they took at pick 33 in that draft last year. It might mean they look to release Sinclair into the midfield a bit more and use him through that part of the ground, or it might mean that Hasty, you know, goes and plays on the wing, and given that Wood and Henry are out. So I guess for them, it just gives them some flexibility to move the magnets around a little bit.
Yeah. Well, look, let's have a look at how the Saints went last week, and they had a really impressive result against the reigning premiers. Winning the game 14-10-94 to Collingwood's 12-7-79. It was a big night for the Saints, with it being Spud's game, and the Saints managed to condemn the Pies to the third consecutive loss to start the season. A bit of a seesawing first half, but a 5-1 third quarter allowed the Saints eventually to hold on to 15-point winners. The Saints managed to dominate possession. They had 50 more disposals and 13 more inside 50s. And despite losing the hitouts 13-47, the Saints matched the Pies at clearance and then controlled the ball around the ground, taking 27 more marks. Nasiah Wanganeen-Malera drove a lot of their play, was probably best on ground. He had 32 disposals, 11 marks, and 613 metres gained, whilst Marshall, Windhager, and Steele had 11, 7, and 6 clearances, respectively. Jack Higgins kicked 4 goals, including one from Roque of the Ponsett stand. Maybe you can meet Kyle Langford out there, given some of Langford's effort against the Swans, whilst King kicked 3.
Yeah, Wanganeen Miller was excellent, mate. Since the halfway mark of 2023, people are talking about his 2024 form, and rightly so, but I reckon since the middle of last year, he's found a real consistency in his game. Windhager had a bit of a breakout game for him. He was sort of in and out of their side last year, and yeah, was really, really good against the Pies. The Pies did challenge late in that game. They scored 35 points from turnovers they generated in their own forward half and outscored the Saints at stoppages 19-7. I think that gives us a little bit of a blueprint on where we can get an upper hand in the game. The difference for the Saints really was they were able to generate turnovers in their defensive half, particularly between the you know, their defensive 50-metre line and the centre line, so that defensive side of centre. They scored 75 points from turnovers where they won the ball back in that part of the ground. And I think that just speaks to the likes of, you know, Battle and Wilkie to intercept and then get the ball in the hands of, you know, the likes of Sinclair and Wanganeen Malera. Battle, a lot of talk about Wilkie, had a great 2023, continued in some really good form this year. Battle's had a really strong start to 2024 himself. He's taken or had 9.5 intercepts a game in his two matches so far, and that currently ranks him 6th in the AFL. So they've got a couple of intercepting options down there, not just Wilkie.
Yeah. Well, let's turn to the match itself. And last year, it was really that lapse at the start of the match that cost us against the Saints. You mentioned some of Redmond's unforced errors, and having to expend all that energy throughout the rest of the game just to catch back up meant that we were easily blown away right at the end there. So how do we prevent that sort of thing from happening again?
Yeah, we've spoken about faster ball movement in the first 2 weeks, and particularly against the Swans, wanting to really take the game on, be brave, go through the middle of the ground and try and break them up. I think we need to strip that back a bit this week and show a little bit more patience with the ball, make the ground big and spread the St Kilda structure. I think if St Kilda are so well set up behind the ball, they do sit back a little bit more than some other teams, and particularly the Saints. St Kilda on average have won 23 turnovers a game in the defensive side of the midfield, so between their defensive 50-metre line and the centre line, which is 2.7 times more than the AFL average, and they're ranked number 4 in the AFL. So, yeah, as I said, they set up that way, set up a little bit further back than what we saw from the Swans last week. The Swans, you know, to give some contrast, they're the number 1 ranked team in the AFL for turnovers between the centre line and their forward 50. So they do their defending a bit more from the forward half of the ground. St Kilda sit back a little bit further. So I think we want to slow the ball down a bit more this week, pick our way around, shift from side to side, use angles, bring our good kickers into the game a little bit more through that ball movement. So players like, you know, Martin's going to be important. Redmond's going to be really important in that from half back, as is McGrath, but also Zach Merritt in and around the midfield using his angle kicks, and blokes like Archie Perkins and the like are going to be really important. So I think control possession once we win it back and look to break them down that way. If we're in the corridor and it's open, yep, take it on. If there's space in front of it, yep, we want to take it. So it's not slow for the sake of going slow, but let's not play into their hands by giving them what they want, and that is, you know, rush, dumped kicks. We want to try and play around their setup rather than trying to just crack through it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think something else, we struggle with Sydney's ball movement from halfback. Obviously, we touched on that a lot when we reviewed the Swans game. St Kilda also have a strong presence on the halfback line. Sinclair, Hill gets back there and moves the ball from halfback. We touched on Wanganeen Miller as well, and they've brought in Hasty, who this seems to be the thing he does as well. Although he could, as you said, he might play further up on the wing. We don't have Guelphy, obviously, this week. He did the job on Sicily back in round one. Do we have someone who can quell at least one of their influences, or are we better off trying to deal with their disposal in our defensive end?
Well, we've got a heap of mids, don't we? So we've spoken already. You know, Caldwell saw a bit of midfield time last week. Hobbs saw barely any. And then we've brought Parrish back in, who, you know, is going to play big midfield minutes. So, yeah, I think you're right. We might see Durham spend a bit more time on the wing as a consequence of that. Is Jake Kelly maybe someone that we could go and do a job on you know, locking down on a Wanganeen Miller and make him really uncomfortable? Or a Brad Hiller. He won't have the leg speed to go with them, but a few do, but he does have the discipline to be really defensive and stick to his craft. So I think we need to see him do a defensive job up the ground and back in our back six to do a job there. But I do think the best QR is prevention in this case. And if we get our ball movement right, that will dictate the effectiveness of their running backs and wingers. If we just give it back easily to their defense and allow them to use their hands to then set up their running players, then we're going to get carved up regardless of who's doing defensive jobs. I think a lot of it is going to come with how we move the ball.
Yeah, I'm just reflecting back to 2022. I do recall that when we reviewed the Saints game from that year, one of the things that we highlighted was the fact that we made Jack Sinclair take a lot of his kicks from the sort of the back pocket area. Whereas if you look at his heat map from last year, he was taking it up around, you know, closer to centre. And yet, if we can, even if they get a lot of the ball, if they're making it, that they're taking their disposals from out of their D50 as opposed to getting up around the centre, even if they get big numbers, it's something that's much more controllable than if they're getting more dangerous up the ground. And again, that relies a lot on our ability to win the ball and get it deep there.
Yeah, you're right, mate. Good memory. And Guelphy, from memory, did put a fair bit of work into Sinclair in that game. And the other one that we haven't spoken about is Nick Hynde. With Redmond coming back, Hynde might pop out of our defensive 50, and he may even be the sub, who knows. But he's another one that could go and play forward and do a bit of a lockdown job on you know, one of their running players. You can't stop all of them, and if you aim to stop all of Sinclair, if he's playing at half back, Wanganeen Miller and Hill, who'll be on the wing. If you're trying to stop all of them, then you're not going to get enough in terms of your own structure, because you're taking three players out of it. And we saw some of the issues in doing that with Guelphy on Sicily in round one. Even though Guelphy did a great job there, we were one down in our setup once we lost the ball. And then you're also losing out offensively because you don't have enough players around the ground who are looking at that side of it either. So you probably need to pick one that you're going to take away. And it probably is Sinclair when he's back. If he goes into the midfield, then, yeah, Wanganeen Miller is going to be the one that we need to lock down on, and that could be Hynde, it could be Kelly, could be Caldwell. But, yeah, I'd be giving a job to one of them.
Yeah. And speaking of locking down, and now especially with Max King out, their small forwards are going to be the biggest threat. So Jack Higgins and Dan Butler, as we said, both kicked four goals last time we played them, and it's, we obviously coming off Tom Papley kicking four goals against us last week. How do we prevent that sort of thing from happening again this time around?
Yeah, let's hope for our sake that Dan Butler's a little bit underdone, having not played the first 2 weeks. But yeah, look, man, I'm going to pick continue on in the theme. Small forwards need space to operate in, and they need pace on the ball. And a lot of what they do is what happens up the ground. So we need pressure at the contest and make sure we don't allow them easy exits through, you know, the contested part of the game, i.e. stoppages. We need controlled ball movement. We need to not give the ball back in dangerous areas as frequently as we have the last 2 weeks. I think this is where having a Draper or a Goldstein playing deep may work, because it gives us an outlet kick deeper and will sort of center us and make the ground bigger and in a way force us to go deeper down the ground. And then if I expect that Cordy will take that matchup out of necessity of height, which then means that Wilkie and Battle are going to play on Langford and Stringer, which gives them some really dangerous options. They're not two guys that you can drop off a lot because they're so smart and creative. So I think we've got an opportunity there. We just can't give them the ball back in dangerous areas too often. And if we can do that, that's going to take the pressure off our back six and make life easier for the likes of McGrath and Redmond.
Let's focus on us a little bit. I'm trying as much this year to not just focus on the opposition in these match previews this year. Let's talk about us. You know, let's think about if you're St Kilda and you're worried about Essendon, what are you worried about, and how do then we make sure that we're getting the most out of our strengths, particularly when we come up that are going to be useful against the Saints?
Yeah, well, look, if 2 weeks defines a strength, then I think so far it would be our contested work, our work at stoppages, and our ability to now score from stoppages. I've already mentioned that St Kilda only scored 7 points from stoppages last week and against the Pies, and 8 points from the centre bounce. So they're not generating a lot of score that way. They are really reliant on turnover. So we can remedy that with how we control the football. Where we can get some real ascendancy is through stoppages. So, yeah, they didn't score from there last week. A little bit better against the Cats the week before from stoppage. They scored 19 points and then 8 again from the centre bounce. So they're not scoring out of that channel. I think that the benefit of winning the ball in that situation is also that there's a concentration of players at the contest, particularly at stoppages, and that helps us to open up and spread their defence. So I think, our one wood is something that they're not great at, and that will be the bit that they're really going to look to take away from us. And I suspect what they'll do is throw more players at the contest to try and slow us down at that area. The consequence of that will be that it does open up their defensive wall and takes them away a little bit from their comfort zone. So if we manage our ball movement correctly, then I think that that can really open up the game for us.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how they adjust from last week against the Swans, where we did have that stoppage dominance, but we didn't get the scoreboard results from it compared to what the Swans were able to generate from a lesser stoppage wins. So it's a game we're coming up against a really well disciplined and set up side at stoppages. It'd be interesting to see the adjustments that they make there.
Yeah, and on that, mate, they don't have a player yet this season who's in the top 23 for contested possession. So they've got Rowan Marshall and Windhager with 11.5 a game, which ranks them 24th in the AFL, and Steele who's ranked 11th, and then it drops down to Mitch Owens, who, you know, plays forward and has been doing a little bit of ruck relief for them, and then, you know, the likes of Jack Higgins and Liam Henry, you know, who are more outside players. So they haven't been able to bring Crouch in because he's been injured. So they don't have a lot of depth in that area of the game. So, yeah, I think we're really starting to show something in an area of the game that they're weak at. Rowan Marshall's their number one clearance player. And we've got the flexibility to be able to throw two really good ruckmen at them. And then they're really relying on Jack Steele as their next clearance winner. And you know, Setterfield's a guy that we can, you know, start to really depend on being able to do a bit of a defensive job on the opposition's best contested ball winner and go and get the footy himself. So, yeah, I think that's the bit that Ross and his team would have been spending a lot of time this week really analysing and working out how they can at best break even in that part of the ground.
Well, let's move to our final thought, and I'll get you to finish this thought, Jono. We'll know if we're a good chance in this game in the first 5 minutes if...
If we're winning the ball from stoppages and we're controlled with the ball in hand and not just giving it straight back to them.
Nice and succinct there. For me, it'll be as long as Redmond hasn't given away a dump free kick, I think we'll be in good hands there. Well, that'll wrap us up for this evening. Thanks again for all your efforts putting together the show, Jono. Once again, if you're interested in hearing our post-match first thoughts, you can find the link to our Patreon in the episode description. Any final words from you, mate?
I do want to give another shout out to Mike, who's given us a hell of a lot of help over the past week or past fortnight. Thanks again, Mike. We're so appreciative of everything that you do to help support Ian and I. But yeah, want to obviously wish the Donnerstadt community and all Bombers fans a really happy and safe Easter. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting us. And yeah, looking forward to getting to Marvel on Saturday.
Well said. Stay safe, everyone. Keep May 11th free and go Dons.